Hi, I'm Mel. I'm an illustrator, designer, and founder of the Mimi for Creatives community. I created Mimi to support creatives with coaching, resources, masterclasses, workshops, and more. You are now listening to season 2 of the Mimi podcast, where I have fun and interesting conversations with some of the nicest creative minds around the world. From artists and illustrators to designers and art directors, I hope you enjoy listening to our chats and learn a thing or two. In today's episode, I chat with the wonderful LA-based artist Biju Carman. I've loved Biju's work for years, and I first met her online when I asked to interview her for my magazine Spellbound. But in today's chat, we talk about her creative upbringing and super cool mum, as well as her love of vintage fashion. We bring up the latest book she illustrated called Style Legends, Rebels and Visionaries, which is absolutely beautiful. She talks us through her process, and we also learn what her favorite style legends are. We also discuss why having an agent works for her now and what some of her biggest creative dreams are. I really hope you enjoy your very laid-back, very Californian conversation. Here's Biju. Hi.
Hi.
I love your glasses.
Thank you.
Amazing. I think I've seen you in a picture. You always take such amazing pictures. I always think, oh, that's so cool. I love how it looks so, like, you know, the way your work is and your fashion and everything is like so perfect. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Have you been good since when did we last chat? It was like a couple of years ago, maybe.
Yeah, I've been good. Yeah, and you've had a baby since then. Yes.
I know. Did I not have the baby yet?
I feel like
I've had it forever now. I mean, she's gonna be 3 in April. So, maybe I was pregnant. Probably. I have had a baby. Anyway, mm-hmm. Are you still in your studio then?
Probably same studio that since we last talked. It looks like a mess right now because I've been working on my table. Background is nice and clean. Mine is not. Sorry.
But I like it. I can tell you've been like really creative and there's loads of stuff. Can you work when it's like that though? I feel like I always need to start from a really clean environment. Are you in the process of making or is it like, do you not mind it being messy?
Yeah, I don't mind right now because I'm in the process of making something. So I have all my books and references out and my paint so that I can just pick it back up from Friday or whatever. I haven't started yet today.
You've been doing a lot of painting. I know whenever I see your stuff on Instagram, it's mainly beautiful paintings. So I want to start at the beginning. And although we've talked already and I know a little bit of your backstory, I still want to talk about it again because some people that might be listening won't know your upbringing in a way. So I like to start at the beginning. And I remember you mentioning that your parents, I mean, you come from a very creative family. And I think your dad is or was a cinematographer. And then I remember you mentioning, and I'm not sure your mum is an artist, but on your mum's side, there's a lot of artists. So I was wondering if you remember what some of the things your parents might have said to you when you were a kid. Like, for instance, my dad used to teach me how to draw, not with my hand, but with my brain. I remember him being like, don't use your hand, use your brain. You know, he used to tell me weird things. And I want to know if you remember stuff like that.
Yeah, well, good memory. Yes. Dad is a cinematographer. My mom is a creative person. I don't think she would call herself an artist, but very creative. And my grandfather was a painter. So, and all of that side of the family, like you mentioned. And I think that it was more that my mother encouraged me to be myself and express myself through like the way I looked and through my art and always be creating. My father's more business minded in terms of his creativity. Like, you know, he's sort of like, yeah, he makes commercial projects, you know, which is also something I do. So maybe he was more encouraging of like needing to make it into a business, not as much about like the creative advice, more like in terms of like sustaining yourself as an artist. Anything specific that my mom would have told me? I don't know if I remember anything specific. They were just really supportive. And I think she more taught me to stand up for yourself and kind of like have faith in your vision being being something worth fighting for, about anything in life, but especially about, like, I think maybe because I'm so fashion oriented, that's been like a way that I express my creativity my whole life, whether it's through my art or through the way that I adorn myself. I mean, when I was a kid, I just loved to dress crazy and make clothes and really decorate myself. And I just remember her being like, don't worry about rules or like things that other people think is normal or not normal, and very much like wanting me to express myself. Like, I remember there was a rule at school where you couldn't wear like platform shoes, and I was so wanting to be like a Spice Girl fashion girl, and she helped me like paint my platform so that they didn't look as high so that I could get away with it. Just little things like that, where I think that's encouraging someone to just be yourself and be strange and not worry about like rules. And that's something that applies to being an artist or just being a creative person in general, how you live your life.
That's pretty amazing that she did that, because I feel like even now as a parent, obviously my daughter is younger now, but you don't want to cause trouble. You know, you want your kid to like do what it's, I mean, I don't know, it's a weird balance. Obviously you want them to be themselves, but it's pretty cool that your mom would have been like, yeah. Because I remember I went to a school where we needed to wear specific, like it needed to be dark blue, which was really annoying, like navy blue. Yeah. And, you know, special, like skirts couldn't be too, like they weren't uniforms, but in that type. And my parents never said, yeah, do your thing. You know, they were like, no, follow the rules, because we don't know what's going to happen. So it's pretty cool that she was like that, because that would foster, yeah, creativity and rule breaking, but in a really cool way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, she told me that when she was in high school, girls weren't allowed to wear pants, and she would flaunt that rule all the time, which is so absurd. And I think she just translated that into anyone telling you what to wear as a woman is just, it's absurd. And yeah, you don't need to follow those rules, and the consequences can't possibly be that. So
yeah, she sounds really cool. So mm-hmm. You've always loved fashion, and obviously it's a huge part of your work in your life. So I remember you mentioning loving playing with dolls and obviously doing clothes for them, and already playing with women like that, like figures. And where did it come from then? Like, yeah, you've always just loved it. You were just attracted to it.
Yeah. I think the dolls are definitely an extension of just a natural obsession that I was born with. I love women in fashion and the way people adorn themselves. And yeah, the dolls were a very good creative outlet for me, because I would make clothes for them and photograph them and do little projects with them and build houses for them and decorate their rooms. And I think maybe, yeah, it's an extension of wanting to create a world, like world building as an artist, and wanting to be interested and excited by everything around me, and like everything that I, yeah, in my home or what I wear or what I create. I want it to all feel like my aesthetic vision. And maybe that was a way, like as a little girl, that I could control it and create that, aside from drawing. And in terms of where it came from, yeah, I don't know. I mean, my mom maybe was a bit, she owned a women's boutique my whole life, so she was like pretty fashion oriented. And my dad being visual, like we said, you know, creating images, maybe it somehow just turned into that. But it always has felt like fashion was my little thing that was sort of my special thing. Now I feel like, so I mean, obviously everyone's been interested in fashion forever, but I think nowadays it's a more common thing that everybody's into because of Instagram. But growing up, it felt like the way that I wanted to make clothes for my dolls and create their worlds was something very specific to me, and felt like my private little way to, yeah, for world building. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I feel like what you like as well isn't what would have been trendy in a way when we're growing up, because you've got a really kind of 60s, 70s. I mean, you correct me, because I'm not, I know about fashion, obviously, but you know, you've got more of a vintage aesthetic. And I feel like when we're growing up, it was more obviously in the noughties. That's not what you, I mean, it doesn't seem to me that that's what you like as much. So yeah, when you were a kid, it must have been a bit different, right? It was stuff that you were loving.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right about 60s, 70s being an era that I've always loved. And I think I just discovered that time period when I was younger, and then you really have just stuck to it my whole life. It just kind of resonated with me, and my taste hasn't changed that much from when I was the a teen, something about that era really struck me, and it just feels right for me to always be digging in there for inspiration.
I saw on your Instagram you posted some pictures of Palm Springs, and obviously you're in LA, and to me that's a big part of LA and Palm Springs that evokes that, like that time, and especially in the architecture and stuff, and what you were saying about wanting to create a whole world, you know, being in your world of having your work and your style and where you live and everything fitting in. Have you found it hard though? I was thinking about this when we just bought a house and I've had to really decorate and I've got a really strong vision. But I find it really hard as well, because in a house, there's so many things to take into consideration for things to look good together. And it's not like when we design or paint something where we can control, you know, it's usually a piece of paper or canvas. Have you found it hard in your everyday life, in a weird way, to curate it in that way? I know that's a bit of a weird question. I'm just curious to hear what you think.
You're right. Yeah, Palm Springs architecture and aesthetic and vintage Los Angeles sort of googie architecture is definitely something I gravitate towards. And my house is not in that style per se, but the way I decorate it is. And I think that that's of course my like main point of reference. Love that always, but I have different tastes and different styles that I like. And I love looking at interior design and all different visions and styles. And my house isn't so 60s. It's like a little bit, but it's a little bit modern too. And I think there's room to, like, at this point in my life in my house, you know, decorate a certain way and be happy with it. And maybe one day my dream would be to have a fabulous vintage Palm Springs home or something. And then I can go really 60s with it. But I like exploring different styles too that fit in my universe. But maybe it's a little bit more contemporary sometimes, a little bit more like country or something another time. And just trying different things. It doesn't all have to be 100% like my illustrations, you know. I like trying different things, yeah.
Okay, so coming back to your work, I wanted to know from you being a, you know, a kid and a teenager and loving fashion and drawing and creating those worlds to now being an artist who makes a living painting and, you know, having commercial projects as well. You have a lot of different things going on. I want to know kind of like the journey and maybe what you've learned along the way.
Yeah, my journey was, always creating, always being obsessed with drawing and painting since I was a kid and in high school, and knowing that I was gonna pursue art or fashion. I dreamt of becoming a fashion editor, somebody like Anna Wintour or Grace Coddington. And I found ways to express that through like my illustration, always doing fashion illustration just for fun in high school, and any time I could work that into school projects, always trying to be creating that. And I tried, you know, I interned for stylists and fashion magazines and things like that, really trying to push my career in that direction. And I learned a lot from those experiences, but I ended up studying illustration, not really knowing what that was, and then fell in love with that as a career and found that was a perfect way for me to build the worlds, like I've been saying, like through my work, and not have to even really work with other people as much and have more of a creative vision on my own and be able to create it all through my illustrations and not have to rely on like working on a set with other people or something the way you would as a fashion editor.
What do you feel like you've learned along the way, or is there things that you feel like you would have done differently maybe?
Yes. I think that maybe I learned a lot about compromising on creative vision and like when to do that and when to not. And looking back, there are of course times when I wish I didn't have to compromise so much or maybe chose not to. But I do think that that's just part of the learning process. And when you're starting out, you usually have to do that more. And as you grow, you end up getting more say and more control over the creative vision. But, you know, that would have been maybe one of the biggest challenges is learning to live with compromise on projects as a commercial illustrator and when to assert yourself. And of course, looking back, there's things that I'm like, oh, I wish I could have just done that exactly how I wanted. It would have turned out better. But it's all part of the learning experience as an artist.
Because you do a lot of paintings that are self-initiated, where you probably, I mean, for sure have complete control over them. And then, yeah, all your projects with clients. Yeah, it's the thing, isn't it? There's always that balance. But actually, yeah, let's talk about your latest project. I mean, it came out, it's probably not your latest project, but it came out this summer, and you had a book called, I'm going to read it because otherwise I'm going to get it wrong. So it's Legends, Rebels and Visionaries. And it looks amazing. I need to order it, actually. I want to know how it came about.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll have to send you a copy, actually.
You don't have to work on it. No, you get your royalties, I hope.
Yes. Well, the book sort of started with a illustration that I did for Rolling Stone. I've done a few album review illustrations for them, which are portraits of musicians, and they're always really fun to do, and some of my favorite commercial work that I've done. And I created a painting of Harry Styles for that one of the commissions that they asked me to do. And one of the editors at Chronicle Chroma saw the piece, and it sparked a concept and a conversation for this book. And they wanted me to expand on that style of piece and create portraits of people with great style throughout recent history. And it was kind of a dream project because I love painting portraits, especially of like musicians and people with interesting style. And I love fashion and fashion illustration. So I got to really do all of the research that I love about different people and finding imagery for inspiration of incredible fashion, as well as getting to share with the reader my point of view and who I think is worth noting and worth learning about, and people who were or are very original. And that's just something that has always inspired my work, people with really original and playful styles. That's really the point of view of the book. And so, yeah, it's 50 portraits of people with great style legends, rebels, and visionaries. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. It was so fun to work on, and I think a really good example of just what I'm all about as an artist and illustrator.
That's amazing. And so you got to choose most of them, basically? Or was it a conversation as well? Or could you just be like, these are the 50 I want to do?
Close to that. It was a conversation with my editor, making sure that there is a good balance of people that readers would know and want to pick up the book to see, you know, the people that they love portrayed, but also people that are lesser known that I am interested in as somebody who researches and loves fashion and reads a lot about it. So maybe people that would be more surprising or somebody that you would learn about. So it was a collaboration with my editors, but mainly my point of view.
Did you like that collaboration? Was it the first time or you've done it before to work with an editor like this?
I have illustrated other books and worked with editors, but this was the most creative control that I've had on a book, and definitely the most input I had from inception, rather than being, you know, dictated different scenarios to draw or different like passages to illustrate. This was very much me from the beginning, and a nice collaboration with the editor.
Yeah, so cool. And I was wondering, I was like, one of my questions was to like make you pick three of your favorite people in there, but I don't know if you can do that. I'm not sure you can pick just three.
Yeah, I know there's so many I love and feel really excited about.
Maybe three of your favorite illustrations, maybe. Well, I don't know, people and portraits, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they overlap. I think you can tell in the one, or maybe not, but to me, like, I can tell the ones I was most excited about just because I love the person and the image equally. But I mean, Peggy Moffitt, who's on the back cover of the book, who is a 60s model who worked with Rudy Gernreich in very, like, modern, forward-thinking, avant-garde clothing. And she was still is an incredible model who just sort of typifies my ideal aesthetic. She's so 60s and so severe and interesting looking and strange. And just loved delving into the old pictures of her. And that's probably, her portrait is definitely my favorite in the book. And I also really love Iris Apfel and how her portrait came out. That was the alternate option for the cover, but I didn't end up making it. But she's, I think she's 101 now. And it was really important to me to show people of different ages and different, you know, periods in their life in the book. And she is the perfect example of someone who's just, who's just known for her incredible style and is so original. And I love that she's over the top, and she was just really fun to draw because of all the different textures and jewelry and patterns that she wears. And I watched a fabulous documentary about her to learn more. And she was really, really fun and inspiring. And maybe Erica Badu, who I think is another person who just has insanely unique, incredible, inspiring style. And she had a lot of different eras of her style to research and draw from. It was hard to decide because they're all so fun, but I think she's really iconic and really cool and very original. And for her piece, I researched like African wax cloth patterns for the background. And those are something I'm personally really inspired by and that what she's all about. So that was really fun to get to draw her and those kind of patterns in one piece.
Must have been so cool getting to research everyone and dive deep into it and figure out. So I want to ask you about your process for this, and it's probably similar to your process of when you paint. Do you start from a picture and you kind of, you know, experiment with different things? Because I know you're not, obviously you're not just repeating whatever the picture is, because all the illustrations are play with patterns and colors. But you painted them all, right? Were they done digitally? I didn't even know, but I'm pretty sure you painted them.
They were actually digital paintings. Yeah. Yeah, except for the piece on the cover, because that hairy illustration that's on the cover is from my original Rolling Stone piece, and that was painted. But because of time constraint on the book and getting 50 portraits done, it just made a lot more sense for me to work digitally. But I work in a digital painting style that's supposed to mimic my gouache painting, so I'm glad it looked seamless to you.
Yeah, no, but I did think it would take a long time, but I wasn't sure how long you had. But
yes,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense, even for tweets.
I would love to paint all of them if I had like a couple of years to work on this, but I did it all in 3 months. So yeah, it was a big time crunch, and the digital Procreate made it possible to do that and be happy with all the work at the same time. But my process for this, and similar to my paintings, started with, yes, a lot of research on each subject, which meant in some cases watching, you know, movies about them, finding books with old pictures, and a lot of extensive online research. And so I gather a ton of imagery on each subject, as well as knowledge about them and their history. And from there, I try to create sort of my quintessential portrait of them that evokes who they are, and that, you know, factors. And that would be the pose, the angle that they're seen at. Maybe there's a certain part of their body, like if their hands have particular jewelry or nail polish on them that feels really specific to their style, maybe I want to make sure their hands are showing, or their feet, if there are certain shoes that feel really indicative of their style, or maybe there's something about their makeup, or there's, in one case, there's a woman with face tattoos, like if then I want to maybe focus more on their face. So a lot of thinking goes into the framing and the posing. And so I'm picking imagery that feels true to them. And then also researching, since I'm only showing one look, like it needs to feel like something that represents them super well. So it's looking through a lot of different eras and outfits and pictures of them, and picking something that would be fun to draw or paint and that I'm excited about and personally like fits my point of view. You know, I mean, pretty much everybody in here fits my point of view, but I'm sure the book leans more like 60-70 skewed because that's just what I love to paint. So I wanted to make sure, like, you know, it represents them, but I'm excited about painting everybody in the book and what they're wearing. And yeah, the way I would use that imagery is that I create a digital collage to begin the sketch. So I'm like taking, you know, a head from one photo of them and then a body from another and then an outfit from another and sort of making a Frankenstein image with the photographs. And from there, I create a digital sketch and then the digital painting from the sketch.
That's cool. I like to do that as well sometimes when it needs to be, especially with people. Because I was going to say that's, but you're really good at faces anyway. But it might have been a bit hard because you don't, you have done real portraits in the past, like you said, even that Rolling Stone work. But did you struggle with that sometimes? Because it's hard to get people right.
It's really hard. And sometimes it's funny, certain ones, like I would just fiddle with them for so long because I was like, something about this is not capturing their essence. And I would ask other people to look at it and say, what is it about this face? Like, what can I tweak that is going to make it look more like this person? And sometimes it's just so small for some reason, these little tweaks. And, you know, I'm luckily the working on Procreate does make it possible to tweak that endlessly and make sure that it absolutely is going to end up looking like them. So ultimately, like, I'm happy with all of the likenesses in the book because I could just edit them endlessly until it finally looked like them. But like the Harry Styles piece on the cover was hand painted, and I remember it struggling with that one more so than all the others because it's there's only a certain extent to which you can change it after you've painted it and really make sure that it looks like him. It's hard, but it's totally doable with Procreate. I mean, that was really the main upside to using that for this book is that likeness is that it's always achievable. It's just a matter of how much time it's going to take.
Yeah. And I feel like it's quite important as well. I don't know why this is making me think of, you know, David Ockney did a portrait of Harry Styles quite recently as well. And I remember there was a lot of people were not happy because it didn't look a lot like him. I don't know if you saw it. And I think
I need to look that up.
And obviously David, I mean, his style is completely, you know, it is different and it's not super realistic. It depends. But anyway, what's funny, though, is probably was a challenge because some people really expect to have their favorite people looking like themselves. So mm-hmm. if you mess it up, they might be like, I'm not sure about this. But yeah, Harry's, I think that's why I thought it was painted because I've seen a lot. Obviously, I've seen the cover a lot of the book and I have seen that piece and I knew that one was painted. But that's why I assumed it was all painted.
Yeah, I mean, anyway. I'm so in awe of artists like Hockney who can create portraits that aren't as photorealistic as what I do and still have it look like the person. Like when someone can do a really loose portrait, like an Elizabeth Payton or even some like of the illustrators who just do sort of caricature work for like the New Yorker or something. I'm very much in awe of being able to exaggerate something or do it very loosely or simply and still be able to capture the person. I feel like I work so hard and put so much detail and try to make it look like the photos that it definitely looks like them. So to have that ability to do something looser that's evocative of the person, I guess you're saying maybe some people thought it didn't look like him, but it's like sometimes those are more interesting when it sort of just captures their essence and doesn't exactly look like them. So I have a lot of respect for that type of work as well.
It's cool as well, but I feel like your work, it's pretty amazing because it is very realistic, but the way you build illustrations and paintings, you bring so much of yourself and loads of other things. You know, it's not like you're just painting someone on a white background and it's really, like there's so much to it that it gives it a bit of that surrealistic kind of vibe as well, which is so nice. So it's a mix of, it looks real, but it's got something else to it. But you know, I love your work, so I will gush about it forever.
Thank you. Well, that is something I was definitely working with on this book because they're not just like a person in a room that you've seen or something like that. A lot of them are more imaginative and bringing in surrealistic elements. And that was another thing that I failed to mention talking about my process is that a lot of the research also was about their environment that would make sense to be evocative of their history or tell you more about them than just what they're wearing. So a lot of the portraits in the book have maybe patterns that are specific references to something about that person's style history or something about what they do, or maybe I did put them in sort of an environment that specifically references somewhere that they would be, but creating a more fantastical version of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Which is super cool because that's what we want to see. That's the magic of illustration, isn't it? it's not just to like replicate, it's to create new worlds. But yeah, I really need to get it. The more we talk about it, I'm like, ah. But okay, I want to talk a little bit about your paintings and the work you do for yourself. I mean, it's not just for yourself, obviously, but you know, the work you self-initiate and how it dive. Oh, what's the word? It's not differ. Oh my God, I'm tired. You know, how it varies from your commercial work, because it's so nice. I always love seeing your process videos of you painting. And I think digital illustration is amazing. And like you said, like it allows us to do stuff like that. Like you can create loads of illustrations for a book and change them and tweak them. But there's something about painting and seeing the process of that and even the result and how it looks on canvas and, you know, seeing the textures and everything. That's so amazing. And you still do a lot of that too. And I was wondering, yeah, how you feel about it and how much do you do it still, like compared to commercial work?
Yeah, they're two separate parts of what I do, but then at times they certainly overlap. I used to paint for commercial projects a lot more. Now I very rarely do, because Procreate does make it so possible to change things when needed and do things quickly. So yeah, at this point in my life, painting tends to be more of a creative outlet and something I do more for myself or for a show. And digital is more for my client work. And yeah, I'm more passionate about painting than I am about working on my iPad. iPad's not something I would go to like for relaxation or for fun as much. It's more of a tool. And painting is just, it's like a spiritual experience, you know. I get lost in it. And I create paintings usually in between client projects, or if I have a show, then I'm really working on it for that. But it's just something I do to keep my practice alive and to make sure that I'm always working on something in between client projects. And it really is just, you know, getting inspired by something and wanting to create and express myself and put imagery out of the world, even if it's not about showing it to anyone, but just getting it out of my mind and onto paper or panel. It's just really, I don't know, I just love it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to do it more. That's what I've got an easel and I need to start doing it just for that process as well. Like you said, we spend a lot of time on screens and there's something so nice about using paint and seeing color and texture, and I miss it. I wanted to know, do you create, so you just said, so you'll do something if you're, you know, you've got a vision for something, you want to paint it, but you sometimes think, okay, I'm going to do like a diptych, I'm going to do a collection. Like, do you plan them sometimes?
Yes. Sometimes I want to do a series and I'll plan it that way, or I have an idea for a zine or a book that I want to create or print. And so that would be more of like giving myself an assignment. Sometimes, yeah, I want to create a body of work or a series. Right now I'm working on hand painting some vintage records that I've been collecting. So that I think of as like a series. Like, I'm not just thinking, oh, I'll do one. I'm thinking I want to paint on all of these and have a body of work of them. And that's been fun because it's just trying something new and different and very loose, and haven't really shown them to anyone. So it's not any pressure about them being so good or looking a certain way. I like giving myself, yeah, projects like that. Like, that's especially fun. And then the paintings that I just create would be based on, you know, oh, I have, it might be like, oh, I have a full week that I don't have anything on my schedule, like, so I can make a big painting. But when I'm busy and want to just do something creative, it would be something smaller, like the records, where, okay, I have a day, like, what's something I can do in a day that will be painted and finished, you know?
Okay. So I had a question about being represented by an agent, because you are represented by an agent. And I kind of wanted to know how it felt for you and if you'd been enjoying it. I can't remember how long you've been represented for, but do they deal with just your commercial work, or do they also handle like all your painting things?
Yes, I have had different agents for the last maybe like 8 or 9 years. And my agent that I'm with now is wonderful, or I have two different ones. They're all wonderful. And it's a huge asset, a huge help for me. My main agent, she handles all the commercial work that I do, and is so she handles any communication with the clients generally, and is always there on calls to make sure nothing's missed. And she handles all of the billing and just really helps me stay on top of things. And she's really helpful. And she doesn't, isn't, none of my agents are involved in my art, my painting practice, or if I have an art show, like sometimes, but it's not really necessary for that. And my other agent is a licensing agent. So they handle any licensing deals and bring me a lot of opportunities in that world, which is its whole own thing. And they're both just really crucial for me at this point. It really saves me a lot of time not having to like do the communication with clients. I think it also is helpful in terms of when you have an agent, you don't have to be the bad guy sometimes. And so it sort of preserves relationships with clients better when you don't have to be the one talking about money. And they also always get me, you know, better budgets than I would be able to get on my own. So it's really helpful. And I've been through different agencies, some that worked better for me and some that didn't. And that's been tricky a little bit, you know, figuring that out and starting and ending different relationships. But I'm at a good place with it now.
That's great to hear. I'm curious now, because you mentioned it, what didn't work with the previous one?
There were a couple of different agencies that I worked with before. One just wasn't getting me enough work, so it didn't feel like worth, there's other things you do, right, that I did with agents where like they ask you to contribute work to certain, you know, initiatives that they're doing and things like that as an agency. And I just wasn't getting anything back after putting in work for things like that. So it felt like not something that was worth devoting like time to. So that's why that one didn't really serve the purpose that I had hoped it would. And the other one, it was more of a like way they were running the agency that just didn't, I didn't find helpful. It was sometimes was more trouble than help. So it just was like, I need somebody who's more on top of things.
But I guess that's always the thing. It takes, it's like any relationship. It takes a few tries to find the right people to work with.
Yeah. And it was hard to, it was really hard to make the decision to leave or to move on because it is a relationship, you know, between two people that you've had for a long time, but ultimately it's a business decision. And I'm with an agent now that is, works really well for me and makes a lot of sense with how she works. So it was worth it to do the switching round.
Yeah, amazing. Talking about struggles, it's always something I like to talk about, the idea of being learning from each other all the time. Is this something you've struggled with as an artist?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure there's many things, but I mean, in the, I think because we were just talking about agents, the first thing that comes up is just, as a commercial artist being paid fairly for my work. I mean, same with working with galleries as well. It's hard. Yeah. I think knowing what I'm worth, and because I love what I do and it is fun a lot of the time. There've been times when clients or people I'm working with don't think that it's like a job, you know, or it's something that you should be compensated fairly for. So, you know, struggling with standing up for myself when I didn't have an agent to be there for me and advocating for myself so that I am paid fairly. And even with the agents, deciding when something is worth taking on, if it pays less or when it's not. I think being like, yeah, as a commercial artist, as any artist, actually, you have to be like your own boss and your own like accountant, and you kind of have to be a bit business minded, which doesn't come naturally maybe to creative people all the time. So getting paid fairly for my work would probably be something that I've struggled with in the past and sometimes still.
Yeah. But I guess like you said, when we love what we do and it's so fun for us, and it's hard to be the person who does the work and also goes and be like, no, you got to pay me that much bigger. You know, it's really hard. Yeah. It's like having two sides of your brain that completely. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the good thing about having an agent, I guess. But it's a shame as well, because I think it's that famous thing of why can't work, well-paid work, be also nice to do? You know, it's like work doesn't have to be horrible to be paid well. It's kind of that, like, oh, if you're having fun, you don't need to be paid a lot. No, it's got nothing to do with how much I enjoy it. So
of course, yeah, I'm sure you've experienced the same thing. And
yeah,
sometimes you're paid well for fun work, and that's the best scenario possible. And sometimes it's a trade-off, you know. Usually I think the rule of thumb has been the more creative freedom, the less you're paid, and the less creative freedom, the more you're paid, right?
Yeah. Well, it's often the really cool projects are paid. So, you know, you'll do, I mean, for me, it's been that. It's like you'll have a project that's not always, but that's not as fun. And it's like the rules are already set and you're just being told what to do and you're paid really well. And then you'll have a smaller project that's really fun and you get to do exactly what you want, or it's a real collaboration and then you're not paid as well. But then it's fun. So it's like always a weird, yeah, it's definitely that. It's a balance.
Yes. Definitely that's been my experience the majority of the time. But then there's those special ones where you get everything and that's the best.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, let's talk about work-life balance. Because you live in LA, and everybody who listens to the podcast knows I'm obsessed with LA and I wish I lived in California, although I love where I live as well. But I'm trying to turn it into California here, even though it's England. So, you know, the weather isn't following my plan. But yeah, are you good at setting boundaries between work and life?
Yeah, it's not hard for me at this point to just take time to not work. Like, that used to be hard for me, but now I find joy in doing so many other things as well. And I find that relaxation and getting outside and just finding happiness from other things is also equally important. So I wouldn't say like I have a problem of workaholism at this point or anything. I have in the past. If anything, now I feel like I've developed a bit of a procrastination problem. It kind of went too far in the other direction. And sometimes if I'm not feeling so directly inspired, I can find it hard to be working enough and pushing myself to do it. I don't know if it's just a changing point in my life where I just have other things going on that I sometimes just want to do, like take a hike or something instead of painting. So lately it's been making sure that I'm creating enough, because I weirdly sometimes will procrastinate something that's so fun that I want to do, like painting these records or whatever. And I think it's just, it's almost like I don't know, it's anxiety about starting something new sometimes. So working on making sure that I'm doing all of the expression that I want to do, not procrastinating it and having anxiety about it, but I definitely don't work too much. I've found a way to balance it. This book was insane. That's when I was really working all the time. And that was about a year ago. And since then I've been taking it easy.
Yeah. It's so interesting though. What would you get when you say you get anxiety, like for the record stuff, where does it come from? Because it's a personal project, isn't it? And you don't have to show it if you don't like it. Or, you know,
no, it's,
I don't know.
I know, it's so weird, because it's like once I'm sitting down to paint, it's the best thing in the world to me and I love doing it. But I'll put it off. Like I get anxiety about like maybe starting something new. And I think, I wonder if maybe it's because I get so in the zone and I don't want to stop. So sometimes if I know I have to do other things in the day, like I'm like, I don't even want to go there because I'll be really annoyed when I have to stop doing it. So it's about getting in a different mindset of being really creative and really focused. So sometimes maybe it's just like my attention span has gotten worse because of like social media, I think. And it's like anxiety about like focusing on one thing for a long time, even though once I do it, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I don't know. I know I've talked to other artists who sometimes have that too. It's like, it's just about sitting down and doing one thing. It's become harder for me.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'm trying to think if I have that. But I know, no, I think I have the, if you start it, it's so annoying if you have to stop. You know, you get in the flow. Like I hate being interrupted in the flow, which I get all the time because I have a toddler and a, you know, there's always stuff. But that's a really interesting point, actually. And like you said, with social media now and being on our computers and emails and whatever, it's rare that we get in the flow. So it's so precious. And but I'm excited to see those records, though, when you get around to painting them, if you show them. You don't have to show them.
Yeah, no, I will share them soon. I've painted a few and just trying to think how I feel about them. But they're really fun. I'm excited to share.
The last thing I want to talk about is about dreams and goals. And when we last talked, so it might have changed, but I want to know the update. You were saying that the ultimate kind of dream for you was to do like a fashion collection, but be actually involved in creating the clothes, you know, all of it, like the pattern. So not just draw, from what I remember you said, but actually create something like that. Is that still like your ultimate dream, or do you have new ones?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have done some things like that. Now I can say, you know, I've done lines with Zara and with some different collaborations with other brands. Like I've worked with Ferragamo and with Target and stuff. But yes, I would love to do something where I have more creative control from inception to final project. And I have something that's a potential in the works that maybe just that I'm excited about, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen yet. But yes, I mean, I want to see my patterns, especially on more clothing and more products for the home and wallpaper and pillows and stuff. So it has happened in some ways, but there's always more that I want to do, and always like my dream collection, you know, so still working on that.
And personally, do you have any big dreams and goals?
I think having a show where I can share my really big paintings, paint bigger, and have a place just to show them and have people be able to see my paintings in person more. I mean, it's still work-oriented, but that just feels like something that I'm so passionate about and would really be a dream to just have like a big gallery show of my big paintings and be able to create that body of work, because it's hard with my studio is bigger than it used to be, and it's a nice size, but I don't have a ton of room to just make big paintings and store them. So having somewhere to show them and hopefully like share them with people and have them live in other people's worlds and their homes would make me really happy.
Yeah. Are you selling some on your website at the moment?
Yeah, I have some little ones on my website, but not the big ones.
No big ones. I feel like you could really send them to the UK. Do you send them everywhere?
I don't at the moment. It's a big...
It's like, tricky, I know.
Tricky, and it's so expensive to mail internationally.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then you need to do a show in London, and then I can buy your big paintings.
Yes, I would love to for your big blank.
I mean, one you. Big painting, because they're probably going to be expensive, which it should be, but I'm saying I'm not going to get... One would be amazing. I do really... And I think... As nothing compares to prints are great, but nothing compares to having a real painting, you know, and walking past it every day and seeing all the little like nuances and textures and the realness of that. Oh, anyway, it was so nice getting to chat. I'm so happy I got to talk to you again. Yeah. And I was excited to talk about the book and hear more about it and the process. And yeah, I definitely need to get it and add it to my collection of art books. And yeah, I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Yes, definitely keep in touch. And thank you so much for having me.
Well, have awesome. An amazing day. I'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Please let us know what you think on Mimi's Instagram or email us if you have any questions. Also, make sure to check out our community on mimiforcreatives.com and listen to previous episodes of the podcast. Reach out if you fancy a coaching session with me and have a look on the website for resources, tips, and tricks. Now, have a wonderful day and I'll see you soon. Bye!